Imagine this. You're on a busy ward, trying to give the best care you can. And suddenly a patient's behavior just escalates, unexpectedly.
Right, it can happen fast.
Maybe their emotions are swinging wildly, or they lash out, or maybe they seem totally detached, even though they're clearly distressed. And you find yourself thinking, okay, what is really going on here? How do I even start to connect?
Those are tough moments, really tough.
Yeah, they can be incredibly challenging, even bewildering sometimes.
Hmm.
Well, today, we're going to try and equip you, our dedicated nursing students, with a deeper understanding.
And some practical tools.
Exactly. Tools to confidently approach some of the most complex patients you'll likely encounter in your career. Okay, let's really unpack this. We're diving deep into personality disorders.
A big topic.
A huge topic, and absolutely crucial territory for anyone in healthcare, but like especially for you, our future nurses.
Because you're right there.
You're on the front lines, building those relationships, giving direct care, seeing these patterns firsthand. We'll be exploring these pervasive, deeply ingrained, often rigid patterns of thinking, feeling, behaving.
Patterns that can profoundly impact a person's life.
Their relationships, how they see the world, and yeah, their critical interactions with you, their healthcare provider. We've got a really rich stack of sources today, everything from detailed lecture notes
Comprehensive study guides.
and even some insightful quiz questions designed specifically for nursing students like you.
Good stuff.
Our mission is pretty clear. We want to pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge.
Not just the textbook stuff.
No, not just definitions. We want the practical wisdom, the stuff that helps you quickly grasp the key clinical symptoms.
Understand some of the underlying pathophysiology.
And most importantly, immediately identify the priority nursing assessments and the really effective interventions for these complex disorders. Think of this as your essential shortcut, maybe, to confidently approaching these patients.
And providing truly compassionate, effective care. That's the goal. That's a fantastic mission. And to start, it's fascinating that to really understand personality disorder, we first need a handle on personality itself.
Right. What is personality anyway?
Well, personality is really about those distinctive, enduring patterns, how we perceive the world, feel emotions, think through challenges.
How we cope, how we behave.
Exactly. These patterns make each of us unique. And importantly, personality traits exist on a spectrum, a continuum.
So, no sharp line between normal and abnormal.
Not really. There's no definitive division. We all have traits, right? Maybe a bit shy, maybe very organized. Some are more pronounced than others.
Okay.
But a personality disorder, as our sources really emphasize, crosses a very important line. It's defined as an enduring, inflexible, and maladaptive pattern of inner experience and behavior.
Enduring, inflexible, maladaptive keywords.
Absolutely. And what makes it a disorder is that this pattern significantly deviates from what's expected culturally.
Right.
It's pervasive, meaning it touches almost every aspect of a person's life.
Not just one area.
Right. It's stable over time, usually popping up in adolescence or early adulthood. And crucially, it leads to significant distress or impairment.
In their social life, work.
Social, occupational, other important areas of functioning, it's not just a quirk, it genuinely hinders their ability to thrive. It causes real problems.
So when we talk about this maladaptive pattern, what does that actually mean for the patient, like day to day? What's their lived experience?
Well, our sources highlight some really core issues, things that directly impact their daily lives and, how they interact in healthcare settings. Often, these individuals are out of touch with self,
Mean.
meaning they frequently lack insight into their own behavior. They don't always connect their actions or their intense emotional responses to the difficulties they face.
So they might not see their part in a conflict, for example.
Exactly. That makes it challenging for a nurse because the patient might genuinely not recognize their role. They're also prone to poor impulse control,
Right. Which can show up in lots of ways.
Oh, many ways.
Yeah.
Sucka angry outbursts, risky behaviors, and unfortunately, they can engage in self-damaging
And
behavior.
these aren't just minor things, right?
No, not minor missteps. We're
Yeah.
talking about actions that can be quite serious, with potentially profound, lasting consequences for their physical and mental health. This really prompts a critical consideration. And from a nursing perspective, thinking about your role, it's one of the absolute first things you must always, always consider. When you encounter any patient diagnosed with a personality disorder, if you were thinking about the absolute top priority of care,
Yeah.
what would it be?
Okay, the sources are incredibly clear on this, crystal clear. And it's a foundational takeaway for any nursing student. Like, engrave this in your mind.
Yes.
Self-harm and suicide.
Absolutely.
For all patients presenting with any personality disorder, the absolute priority of care, your first and foremost concern, is assessing for self-harm and suicide risk.
It's number one. It's not just a recommendation. It is the number one priority for patient safety. You need to be acutely vigilant, proactive in this assessment, every single interaction.
Understanding that underlying distress can manifest in these really dangerous ways.
Precisely.
And continuing with these general characteristics, this enduring maladaptive pattern also profoundly impacts two key areas of functioning, vital areas.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's a disturbance in self-functioning.
Self-functioning, like identity.
Exactly. Their sense of identity, they might struggle with who they are, feel empty, fragmented. It also affects their ability for self-direction.
So setting goals, following through.
Yeah, they often find it hard to set goals, pursue them consistently, or take responsibility for their own life path. Second, there's significant impairment in interpersonal functioning.
Relationships.
This directly impacts their capacity for empathy. They might struggle to understand or share the feelings of others.
Okay.
And their ability to form deep, meaningful, stable, intimate connections.
Wow. Imagine trying to build a therapeutic relationship with someone who struggles with their own identity and can't consistently connect with yours.
It's incredibly challenging. Understanding these general characteristics provides that vital foundation before we dive into specifics.
Right, because these core issues pop up differently in each disorder.
Exactly. They surface in unique and challenging ways across each diagnosis you'll encounter.
Okay, let's zero in on borderline personality disorder, or BPD.
Okay.
This is often described as the most frequently diagnosed personality disorder in clinical settings.
Yes, very common.
And for nurses, this is where things can get really interesting, complex, and sometimes, honestly, incredibly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
You will encounter patients with BPD in your practice. Understanding its nuances is just paramount.
An intriguing aspect of BPD, maybe intriguing isn't the right word, but a key aspect, is the sheer intensity and the rapid fluctuation of emotions and behaviors.
Right, the ups and downs.
Huge ups and downs. Patients with BPD exhibit some very distinct, often distressing patterns that you, as a nurse, absolutely need to recognize. First, there's intense affect and poor emotional control.
Intense feelings, hard to manage.
Extremely reactive emotionally. Yeah. Their feelings can shift dramatically, unpredictably, often triggered by seemingly minor events. And they have very minimal coping skills for this internal turmoil.
So life feels like?
Like one crisis after another. Imagine living in a constant state of overwhelm where your emotions are this raging storm you just can't control.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. And that intensity can be so overwhelming, it might even lead others, including healthcare providers sometimes, to feel a sense of avoidance, which is a key challenge. Then there's poor impulse control and self-damaging behaviors. This is truly a hallmark of BPD.
Okay, what kind of behaviors are we talking about?
Things like cutting, burning, scratching themselves. Often these are maladaptive, yet maybe effective in the moment. Coping mechanisms.
Coping with what?
Overwhelming emotional pain, or maybe a profound sense of emptiness. But it's not just self-mutilation. Impulsivity can also show up as impulsive sexual activity.
Reckless driving. Binge eating.
Yes. Substance abuse. Even impulsive suicidal attempts. It's crucial to understand these behaviors are often desperate attempts to manage overwhelming internal distress.
To feel something, maybe. Or punish themselves.
Could be either. Rather than necessarily a genuine, planned desire to end their life. But the risk is still very, very real.
Always take it seriously.
Always. With utmost seriousness. Another crucial manifestation, and one you as a nurse might experience directly, is unstable relationships and dichotomous thinking.
Okay, explain dichotomous thinking.
It's that black and white thinking. Patients with BPD often struggle with relationships because they perceive others in extremes, either all good or all bad.
So you might be the best nurse ever, 1 minute.
We're just offering a glass of water, yeah. And then maybe you set a necessary boundary and suddenly you're the worst, uncaring, even abusive in their eyes.
Wow, that quick switch.
Exactly. It's that classic splitting or dichotomous thinking, perceiving people, situations, even themselves in all or nothing terms. No room for nuance, complexity, or seeing both good and bad.
Makes therapeutic relationships incredibly difficult.
Extremely. To maintain that stability is hard. Central to BPD is profound emotional dysregulation.
The core inability to control emotions.
Yes, especially in social interactions. Mm. It leads to marked shifts in mood, swinging from intense depression to transient mood crashes, often related to stress.
Okay.
They experience extreme rejection sensitivity.
Where even minor criticism feels huge.
Catastrophic, like abandonment.
Yeah.
And they can have inappropriate, intense outbursts of anger. Their emotions just don't follow typical patterns. They're often overwhelming, uncontrollable, hard for them to manage or even understand. Finally, our sources note something particularly tricky for us as healthcare professionals. Patients with BPD can sometimes appear more competent than they actually are.
The surface presentation.
Right. They might seem capable, articulate, kind of put together superficially, like they have their life under control.
But underneath.
Beneath that facade, their internal world is often in profound turmoil, filled with distress, emptiness, and a severe lack of effective coping skills.
That's a really important point about appearing competent. As a nurse, if you just see the surface, you could completely miss the chaos, the deep suffering.
Absolutely.
Which highlights why a thorough, comprehensive assessment, looking beyond those first impressions, is so critical, isn't it?
Absolutely critical. If we think about the broader context, BPD affects about 0.5% to 2.7% of the general population. The median is around 1.6%.
Okay.
Traditionally, it's been more commonly diagnosed in women in clinical settings, but newer research suggests it might be more evenly distributed in the general population.
So maybe men present differently, get misdiagnosed.
That's a possibility, yeah. Leading to underdiagnosis or misdiagnosis in men.
And what about the risk factors? What makes someone more vulnerable to developing BPD?
Significant risk factors include a history of physical or sexual abuse. That points to the profound impact of early trauma.
On brain development coping.
Exactly. Parental loss or separation, especially during childhood, is also a notable risk factor. Contributes to attachment issues, fears of abandonment.
Right.
And it's really important for us as nurses to remember there's a significantly greater risk of suicide in early adulthood for individuals with BPD.
Often peaking around age 30.
Yes, often peaking around then, which strongly reinforces that initial priority of care we talked about, that unwavering focus on self-harm and suicide risk.
Mm.
Understanding the brain, the neurobiology, can offer some insight into the why behind these intense symptoms.
Okay, what does the research suggest?
Research suggests central nervous system dysfunction, possibly structural and functional changes in areas vital for emotional processing and impulse control.
Like the limbic system.
Exactly. The limbic system, our brain's emotional control center processing fear, anger, pleasure, might be overactive or dysregulated.
Leading to that emotional reactivity. The crises.
Could be. That one crisis after another feeling, the overwhelming effect. Concurrently, the frontal lobe, particularly the prefrontal cortex.
Which controls impulses, judgment.
Right. Crucial for executive functions like impulse control, planning, judgment. It could show alterations. These changes might make it harder for patients with BPD to, like, put the brakes on impulsive behaviors.
Or consider long-term consequences.
Precisely. And there's also a possible link between increased dopamine levels and those transient psychotic-like states.
Like paranoia or dissociation under stress.
Yes. That patients might occasionally experience. It offers a glimpse into the neurobiological underpinnings. It helps us see their impulsivity, not just as a choice maybe, but as a symptom rooted partly in neurobiology.
Okay, so you're on the floor. You're caring for a patient with BPD, given everything we've just discussed.
Yeah.
What's your immediate critical priority in assessment? Where do you start?
Great question. Your physical assessment is absolutely crucial and needs to be incredibly thorough.
What are you looking for specifically?
Evidence of self-harm injuries, both old and new. Remember, these can be subtle, hidden.
Inner thighs, abdomen, underclothes.
Exactly. Assess the type, age, healing of any wounds. Because of the common impulsivity, you also need to assess for signs of STDs.
From impulsive sexual activity.
Could be. Or signs of drug use related to substance abuse. And don't overlook basic physiological needs either. Assess sleep patterns. Insomnia, hypersomnia are common.
Nutritional status, too.
Definitely. Eating habits are often disrupted due to emotional instability, chaotic lifestyles.
Okay, physical assessment covered. Then what?
Then seamlessly move into your mental health assessment. This is where you dig deeper.
Into their social history, high-risk behaviors.
Yes. Look for patterns of high-risk behaviors indicating impulsivity, poor judgment. Explore the quality and stability of their relationship.
Are they turbulent, marked by that idealization and devaluation, short-lived.
Exactly. Yeah. Are they characterized by intense dependency? You're listening for themes of fear of abandonment, relationship chaos.
Okay.
Also, gather detailed info on any family conflicts, struggles with education or employment, gambling problems, other job issues.
Get that holistic view.
Right. A holistic view of their current functioning and the long-term pervasive impact of the disorder across all life domains. Okay, so once you've gathered that critical information through assessment, the next big question for a nurse is, how do we effectively intervene? What can you actually do?
Right, the action plan.
Foremost, and honestly, it cannot be overstated, safety monitoring and the prevention and treatment of self-harm.
Priority number one.
Again.
Always number one. Your vigilance can quite literally save a life. This means creating a safe environment, removing potential means of self-harm.
Regular checks.
Regular checks as per policy, being proactive if you identify immediate risk, and treating any existing injuries with care, non-judgmentally.
Okay, safety first. What else?
Next, and this might seem basic, but it's profoundly important, consistent comprehensive education on essential self-care.
Sleep hygiene, nutrition, exercise.
Yes. Educate on sleep hygiene, regular schedule, relaxing routine, avoiding stimulants. Mm-hmm. Explain proper nutrition. Encourage balanced meals. Emphasize regular exercise for mood regulation, stress reduction. These seem fundamental, but for someone whose life is maybe chaotic.
Exactly. The structure, the routine, the sense of self-agency they provide can be foundational for building emotional stability and a more organized life. When it comes to medications, our sources are very clear. They are used short-term only.
And for symptom management, right? Not a cure.
Precisely. Primarily for symptom management. Things like anxiolytics for severe anxiety, antidepressants for depressive symptoms, maybe mood stabilizers for the dramatic mood swings.
But just targeting specific symptoms.
Yes, specific distressing symptoms. Not a primary cure for BPD itself. They're crucial adjuncts to therapy, helping manage the most overwhelming symptoms so the patient can actually engage more effectively in other treatments.
Okay, here's a quick quiz question from our sources that really hammers this home. Helps distinguish fact from misconception. Is long-term use of psychopharmacologic agents a primary mode of treatment for BPD? True or false?
Thinking about what we just said.
What would you say?
The answer definitively from our sources is false.
Right. Short-term symptom management.
Medications are for symptom management, short-term relief, to make other therapies possible. Mm-hmm. Not long-term primary treatment. That's a critical distinction for your practice and patient education. Now, this is where it gets really interesting and incredibly important for understanding and treating BPD, dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT.
Ah, DBT. You hear a lot about this.
You do. It's widely described as the primary mode of treatment for BPD. It's evidence-based, its effectiveness is well-researched.
Okay.
DBT is comprehensive, structured therapy. It effectively combines cognitive and behavioral strategies. It recognizes that complex interplay between thoughts, feelings, actions in BPD.
And the core philosophy is dialectics. Finding balance.
Exactly. Finding a synthesis between opposing ideas like acceptance of oneself as they are alongside the need for change. It's highly structured and aims to teach very specific practical skills.
That's fascinating. A therapy is specifically tailored for BPD.
Yeah.
So what specific skills does DBT teach that make it so effective? This sounds like something every nurse should know about.
Absolutely. Even if you're not the therapist delivering it, DBT includes group skills training in critical areas that address the core deficits in BPD. These include, first, emotional regulation.
Okay, managing those intense emotions.
Helps patients understand, identify, and manage them, moving away from that overwhelming reactivity. They learn to identify triggers, recognize physical sensations of emotions, practice techniques to reduce emotional vulnerability.
Like basic needs, sleep. Nutrition.
Yes. Attending to those helps. Second, interpersonal effectiveness.
Relationship skills.
Improving relationship skills. Mm. Learning how to ask for what they need effectively. How to say no to unreasonable demands while keeping self-respect. How to navigate conflict without blowing up relationships.
Being assertive, clear.
Right. Third, distress tolerance. This is vital.
Coping with pain without making it worse.
Exactly. Coping with painful situations, intense emotions, without resorting to those maladaptive behaviors like self-harm or substance abuse. Skills might include distraction, self-soothing, improving the moment.
Like that TIPP skill.
Yeah.
Temperature. Intense exercise.
Yes. Pace breathing. Paired muscle relaxation. Or just considering pros and cons of acting on an impulse. Fourth, mindfulness.
Being present, non-judgmental.
Staying present, aware of the current moment, observing thoughts and feelings without judgment, being in the wise mind, that balance between the emotional and rational mind. Reducing reactivity. And finally, self-management skills are woven throughout, helping them build a more stable, functional life, create routines, take responsibility for their well-being.
That's a truly comprehensive set of skills. Gives you real insight. So building on that for our nursing students, if you saw this question maybe on an exam, which type of skills training would least likely be involved in DBT? Options: mindfulness, distress tolerance, self-management, or self-awareness. What would you say? Based on our sources.
Okay, thinking about the core modules. Mindfulness, distress tolerance, and self-management are all explicitly listed as core skills training modules in DBT in our sources.
Right.
While self-awareness is absolutely crucial, a huge goal in overall BPD care, something nurses always encourage. It's not typically listed as one of the core skills training modules in the same distinct way.
It's more like an outcome.
More of an ongoing process and an outcome of learning the other skills, yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, and this is profoundly important for you as a nurse, nurse self-awareness is absolutely essential when caring for BPD patients.
Understanding your own reactions.
Yes. Their intensity, that good nurse, bad nurse dynamic, the challenging behaviors, they can evoke very strong emotional responses in caregivers. Frustration, anger, helplessness, even feeling manipulated. Understanding your own reactions, biases, limits is key to maintaining professional boundaries, preventing burnout, and sustaining a therapeutic relationship.
You can't care effectively if you're not aware of how it's impacting you.
Exactly, and how to manage those impacts.
Okay, let's shift gears quite dramatically now to antisocial personality disorder, or ASPD.
Okay, a very different picture.
Sometimes called psychopathy or sociopathy, right? And it presents a very different clinical picture from BPD. While both might involve impulsivity.
The underlying motivations, the core internal experience, worlds apart.
Demanding a fundamentally different nursing approach.
If we connect this to the broader context, the absolute core of ASPD is a marked pattern of pervasive disregard for and violation of the rights of others.
Disregard and violation.
Key terms. These individuals are often profoundly aggressive, manipulative, self-centered, impulsive, and a defining, often chilling characteristic is they show absolutely no remorse or guilt.
Even when they cause significant harm.
Emotional, physical, financial harm, no remorse. And a profound, critical characteristic of ASPD is a deep-seated lack of empathy or human compassion.
They just can't understand or share others' feelings.
Struggle to, or are simply unable to, genuinely. This lack of empathy allows them to exploit, deceive, harm others without internal distress, often viewing others as just tools.
Tools to get what they want.
Pretty much. They may also be verbally abusive and humiliate others as a way to assert dominance, control, or maybe just for amusement.
And the clinical course.
Described as chronic and, significantly, often extremely difficult to treat or teach. They're frequently resistant to interventions, highly manipulative of therapeutic environments.
Seen as untouchable sometimes.
Unfortunately, yes, due to their ingrained patterns.
So who typically gets diagnosed with ASPD? Are there specific criteria or comorbidities nurses should be aware of?
Prevalence rates range from about 0.2% to 3.3% of the general population. Highest rates consistently seen in men.
Especially those with alcohol or substance use issues.
Yes, particularly those with co-occurring alcohol use disorder, highlights a significant gender disparity in diagnosis. And this raises an important question about diagnosis itself, which is key for nurses reviewing charts.
Okay.
A definitive diagnostic criterion is that the individual must be at least 18 years old. And crucially, they must also have a history of one or more characteristics of conduct disorder before the age of 15.
Conduct disorder before 15. That's essential.
Absolutely. It highlights a long-standing ingrained pattern of rule-breaking, aggression, disregard for others' rights that starts much earlier. Truancy, cruelty to animals, destroying property.
Serious violations of rule.
Yes.
Okay, that's a very specific point. So another quiz question from our material to nail this down. Is the following statement true or false? A person with antisocial disorder typically must be older than the age of 18 years and have shown some evidence of a conduct disorder.
Based on our sources, what do you think?
Given what you just said, it has to be true.
Unequivocally true. That history of conduct disorder symptoms before 15 is a critical, non-negotiable precursor.
Got it. What about comorbidities, other issues alongside ASPD?
Common co-occurring conditions include mood disorders, anxiety disorders, other personality disorders, and significant alcohol and drug abuse.
And the substance use often makes things worse.
Often exacerbates the clinical picture, yeah. Increased impulsivity, aggression, poor judgment. Complicates nursing care considerably. On the biological side of ASPD, there's evidence suggesting a neural basis for that characteristic fearlessness, lack of remorse.
Brain areas involved.
Yeah, that involves areas like the limbic system, specifically the amygdala.
Which processes fear, emotions.
Right. And the prefrontal cortex, the dorsolateral cortex. These are regions central to processing emotions like fear and guilt, decision-making, inhibiting inappropriate behaviors.
So dysfunction there could lead to?
Lack of fear, impaired ability to learn from punishment, profound lack of remorse, the poor judgment seen in ASPD makes them prone to risky, impulsive, harmful actions without those usual internal breaks.
Okay, so for a nurse dealing with a patient presenting with ASPD, what are the primary assessments? What should you be meticulously focusing on for safe care?
Good question. Your physical assessment should primarily focus on the effects of chronic substance use.
Because it's so often comorbid.
Exactly. Look for signs related to prolonged alcohol or drug abuse, liver damage, track marks, poor nutrition, neurological deficits. These have significant physical health consequences.
Okay. And the mental health assessment?
There. Delve into the quality of their relationships. Typically superficial, exploitative, transient, not deep or meaningful.
Look for patterns of manipulation. Using others.
Yes. Listen for those patterns and critically assess their level of impulsivity and any history of aggression.
Towards themselves or others?
Less commonly towards themselves as a coping mechanism like in BPD, but maybe as a manipulative act. More commonly, aggression towards others. This assessment is vital for anticipating and mitigating safety risks on the unit. Nursing interventions for ASPD patients, they can be particularly challenging, given the chronic nature, the lack of remorse, the manipulation.
And so what can you do effectively?
Interventions focus on key practical areas. First, build a therapeutic relationship, but with a huge caveat.
Not overly friendly or enabling.
No. It requires establishing very clear, consistent boundaries, maintaining predictability, being firm but fair. They will test limits.
So consistency is key.
Your unwavering consistency is often what they need, even if they resist it overtly. Avoid power struggles, emotional arguments. Second, encourage self-responsibility and self-awareness. But understand, this is different from fostering emotional insight, like with BPD.
How so?
For ASPD, promoting accountability for their actions is crucial. They need to understand the consequences of their behaviors, even if they don't feel remorse, and you must hold them to those consequences.
Set realistic expectations and stick to them.
Exactly. Third, it's vital to address physical health and comorbidities. Treating substance abuse, other co-occurring issues is practical, necessary. These might be areas where they're more open to intervention.
Okay.
Finally, patient education is still part of the role, though it can be especially hard with ASPD.
Due to manipulation, resistance?
Yes. You may need to adapt your approach significantly. Focus on concrete, factual information about their health, not abstract emotional concepts. Be prepared for them to test your knowledge or twist the information.
Okay, let's really unpack this crucial difference, especially for nurses on the front lines, because this distinction isn't just academic, right?
Yeah.
It dictates your whole approach.
Absolutely. Both BPD and ASPD can present with impulsive behaviors, actions that look self-damaging. But the why, the reason behind them, is profoundly, fundamentally different.
Understanding that difference is critical.
What's really illuminating here is that in BPD, the disorder is fundamentally driven by intense emotional dysregulation.
Fear of abandonment, internal turmoil.
Yes. When patients with BPD engage in self-damaging behaviors, cutting, substance abuse, impulsive actions, these are often desperate, maladaptive attempts to cope.
Coping with overwhelming internal pain, feeling numb.
Exactly. Or a manifestation of identity disturbance, an attempt to manage unbearable feelings. Despite the chaos, how their behavior push others away, at their core, they often desperately seek connection.
Even if their actions seem counterproductive.
Right. Their struggle originates from immense internal suffering. In stark contrast, ASPD is characterized by that pervasive pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others.
Their behaviors are mainly externalizing.
Primarily. driven by a profound lack of empathy, manipulativeness, a tendency towards aggression, with little to no remorse or guilt.
Okay.
Any harm caused, even if it looks self-damaging, like risky drug use leading to injury. It's typically a byproduct of their disregard for rules, their own or other safety.
Or a manipulative act.
Or a calculated manipulative act to achieve a goal, rather than a genuine effort to manage overwhelming internal emotional pain. They don't generally self-harm to cope with deep emotional distress. Their internal world often lacks that kind of emotional depth about others' suffering.
So this means your entire approach as a nurse, interventions, boundaries has to be profoundly different.
Complete.
With BPD, you're addressing deep emotional pain, building coping skills, focusing on emotional regulation, validating their internal experience. You're working with someone who often feels too much.
Mm-hmm.
With ASPD, you're dealing with someone who lacks remorse and empathy, often feels too little in terms of genuine connection. Behavior is driven by external gain or control.
Right.
Your focus shifts dramatically. Firm, consistent boundaries, safety for others, promoting responsibility and accountability.
Rather than trying to foster deep emotional insight or empathy in the same way.
Recognizing that fundamental difference guides your interventions and prevents frustration.
Exactly. Using the wrong approach just won't work.
Now, let's quickly touch on a few other personality disorders. You'll encounter a variety, and it's important to be aware of their distinct features beyond just BPD and ASPD.
Okay.
First up, obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, OCPD. Now, the name sounds a lot like OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder.
But they're fundamentally different.
Our sources are very clear on that.
Yes, and this often confuses students. It's a key distinction. So here's the question. A person with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder experiences obsessions and compulsions just as a person with obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD. True or false?
It's got to be false. It's a crucial difference.
Exactly right. OCPD is characterized by a pervasive preoccupation with orderliness, perfectionism, mental, and interpersonal control, often at the expense of flexibility, openness, efficiency.
They get bogged down in details, rules, lists.
So much so that they have immense difficulty making decisions, completing tasks. Imagine a patient insisting their med be given at the exact minute,
mm-hmm.
or agonizing over choosing a meal to find the perfect one.
Sounds exhausting, tense, joyless.
Often, yes. Excessively devoted to work, maybe, at the expense of leisure relationships. The critical difference from OCD and OCPD, there are no true obsessions or compulsions in the clinical sense.
No intrusive thoughts followed by rituals.
No. Instead, it's a deeply ingrained personality style. They often see their meticulousness as a virtue. It's egocentric.
So, nursing management. Support their need for order, but gently encourage flexibility.
Exactly. Support where appropriate. Gently encourage flexibility. Help them see the bigger picture. Be patient with their need for control.
What about someone consistently showing an exaggerated sense of self-importance? Grandiose, needing constant admiration, believing they're superior.
That immediately points to narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD.
Okay.
Characterized by grandiosity, strong sense of entitlement, profound lack of empathy. They genuinely believe they are special, unique, expect constant admiration, preferential treatment.
They seem confident, maybe even charming.
Outwardly, yes. But a crucial insight for nurses. Their self-esteem is incredibly fragile, dependent on external validation.
So a perceived slight could trigger.
Intense rage, profound shame, deep resentment makes boundary setting really tricky. It requires immense professional composure from you.
So the nursing challenge is focus on their actual health needs, not feed the grandiosity.
Exactly. Maintain firm but polite boundaries. Understand their demanding nature often masks deep insecurity.
Okay, this next one. Paranoid personality disorder. Sounds like someone you wouldn't want to play poker with.
Indeed. These patients exhibit long-standing pervasive suspiciousness and mistrust of others.
Interpreting even harmless actions as hostile.
Yes, interpreting benign actions or comments as malevolent, deceptive, threatening. They're often guarded, hostile, angry, unforgiving, hold grudges.
Ideas of self-importance fueling belief others are plotting against them?
Often, yes. An important insight for nurses. Their hostility often stems from profound, pervasive fear and a perceived need for self-protection, not just malice.
So your approach needs to be?
Direct, honest, professional. Avoid being overly warm or friendly, as that could fuel suspicion.
Building trust is slow. Needs consistency.
Very slow. Requires consistency and transparency. Then there's schizoid personality disorder. These individuals are expressively impassive, interpersonally unengaged.
They struggle to experience joy.
Yeah.
And hedonia.
Yes, struggle with joy or pleasure. Often prefer solitude, choose jobs with little social interaction, show more interest in objects, things, abstract concepts than people.
Appear cold, detached, little desire for close relations.
Often, yes, even with family. For a nurse, recognizing their profound need for personal space is key. Avoid demands for emotional expression or forced intimacy.
Pushing for connection would likely backfire.
Probably. Increase discomfort, withdrawal, focus on practical care, respect their boundaries.
Histrionic personality disorder. The name itself sounds dramatic.
Exactly right. These are attention-seeking, excitable, emotional individuals. Insatiable, pervasive need to be the center of attention, receive approval.
Moody. Feel helpless if ignored.
Yes. Easily frustrated, feel devastated when not the focus. May use dramatic speech, exaggerated gestures, overly theatrical emotions.
Or even seductiveness to draw focus.
Can happen. Often lack loyalty, fidelity in relationships, which tend to be superficial, quick to form and dissolve.
So as a nurse, clear boundaries. Redirect attention seeking.
Absolutely. Set clear, firm boundaries. Consistently redirect attention-seeking therapeutically, non-punitively. Focus strictly on their actual medical needs, not the theatrics. Avoid excessive attention for drama.
And finally, what about someone who struggles profoundly to stand on their own? Seems overly reliant on others.
Precisely. We're talking about dependent personality disorder.
Intense need to be taken care of.
Profound, intense, pervasive psychological need. Leads to submissive, clinging behaviors, pervasive fear of separation. Decision-making is incredibly difficult or non-existent for them.
Constantly seeking reassurance, advice, even for minor things.
Yes. May withdraw from adult responsibilities, let others make all decisions, often tolerate abuse or exploitation to maintain a relationship, avoid being alone.
So the nursing approach, gently encourage independence.
Gently encourage small, independent choices in their care. Gradually foster autonomy, provide positive reinforcement for independent actions, but be mindful not to feed the dependency or foster an overly nurturing dynamic.
Okay, now for a quick look at impulse control disorders. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about impulsivity as a feature of BPD and ASPD, mm-hmm. but what exactly are these specific impulse control disorders? How do they differ as distinct diagnoses?
Good question. This refers to a specific class of disorders characterized by profound difficulties resisting impulses, drives, temptations to perform an act that's often harmful.
Harmful to self or others.
Right. While poor impulse control is a feature of some personality disorders like BPD and ASPD.
These are distinct diagnoses where the core problem is inability to resist a specific impulse.
Exactly. Rather than being part of a pervasive personality pattern affecting multiple areas, the focus here is the recurrent failure to resist an urge, leading to distress or harm, often arising tension before the act, relief afterward.
So what kinds of disorders fall under this umbrella, and what's the general treatment approach?
Our sources list several distinct types. Oppositional defiant disorder, typically in kids, adolescents, mm-hmm. persistent pattern of defiant, disobedient, hostile behavior towards authority. Conduct disorder, more severe. Repetitive, persistent violation of basic rights of others or major societal norms, often a precursor to ASPD.
Right, we mentioned that link.
Intermittent explosive disorder, recurrent behavioral outbursts, aggression grossly out of proportion to provocation, failure to control aggressive impulses, often with little remorse.
Then kleptomania.
The irresistible urge to steal items, typically not for personal use or monetary value, but for the thrill. The relief of tension.
And pyromania.
Fascination with fire. Impulse to set fires. Again, for gratification or relief of tension from the act itself. Not for money, revenge, politics.
And treatment for these.
Typically involves a comprehensive approach. Combination of psychopharmacologic agents to manage symptoms like aggression or impulsivity.
Psychotherapy. Behavioral interventions.
Yes. Various forms of psychotherapy to address underlying issues, develop coping strategies, and behavioral and social interventions modifying behavior, enhancing problem solving, improving daily functioning. Often involve family therapy, too.
Wow. We've truly covered a significant amount of ground today.
Well, we really have.
From the general characteristics of personality disorders,
yeah.
What makes them enduring, maladaptive to diving deep into the critical differences between BPD and ASPD.
Motivation, presentation.
Right. And then a tour through several others, plus impulse control disorders.
Yeah.
For you, our future nurses, the most important nuggets.
Key takeaways.
Absolute priority. Of assessing for self-harm and suicide risk in all these patients, recognizing the specific nursing assessments, and understanding the targeted interventions, especially the huge role of DBT for BPD.
If we connect all of this to the bigger picture for your nursing practice, remember, these are some of the most challenging, yes, but ultimately some of the most profoundly rewarding patients to work with.
Challenging but rewarding.
Your ability to understand the underlying dynamics, recognize key symptoms, prioritize safety above all else, apply appropriate evidence-based interventions like DBT principles, that's invaluable.
Yeah.
And the source material consistently emphasizes nurse self-awareness, which isn't just a nice-to-have suggestion.
It's crucial, non-negotiable.
Absolutely. A crucial, non-negotiable tool in your therapeutic arsenal to prevent burnout, maintain essential professional boundaries, and truly be present and effective for these individuals.
That self-awareness lets you understand your own reactions, keep care patient-centered.
Even when it gets tough, even in the face of provocation.
So what does this all mean for you, our listeners, as you step into your nursing career armed with this deeper understanding?
Well, the journey with patients who have personality disorders, it's often long, marked by remissions, recurrences. It demands immense patience, resilience, and a deep well of empathy.
Even when their behaviors are difficult, provoke uncomfortable reactions.
Yes, even then. So my provocative thought for you to carry forward is this. Consider how your consistent, unwavering presence, your commitment to clear boundaries, your genuine, non-judgmental approach to their care.
Even when they seem to push you away, try to undermine things.
Even then, consider how that can be the most stable and healing force in a life, often defined by instability, chaos, and profound internal pain. It's really a testament to the profound, unique impact a nurse can have. Simply by showing up, holding that space, consistently applying skilled, compassionate care.
That's a powerful and deeply insightful thought to carry with you as you prepare for your future in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep digging into this topic. Review your class notes on BPD and ASPD. Delve even deeper into dialectical behavior therapy.
The more you understand,
the better equipped you'll be to truly make a difference in the lives of your patients, transforming those challenging moments into opportunities for healing and growth.